From Bureaus Worldwide, this is Epicenter.
Thank you very much. It's a beautiful afternoon here in Salford. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Was your weekend relaxing? Was it? Was it pleasurable? Hope you're in good form and looking forward to the week. I've got a great guest for you today. I'll tell you more about her in a moment. Let's do Monday's show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Oh, it is lovely today. Lovely.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Romola Dee is an independent investigative journalist, and she's very, very good. You can find her on YouTube at Romola Dee Reports. That's the channel, or the website everydayconcerned.net. And I've been watching her of late, and mostly because you've been getting in touch with me, telling me I should have her on. I reached out to Romola over the weekend, and she's going to join me this hour to talk about her own coverage of and investigation into the COVID virus, COVID-19, how it came into our lives, where it originated, and more importantly, where it's all meant to go. So Romola Dee joins the programme live from Massachusetts in around about a half an hour's time, and that's a good thing. And I'm sure when she's with me, you will have contributions to make. You will have things to say. So you can say them via the medium of Twitter. So do that at any time you feel like it. Yes, indeed. I'm still opening websites as I'm chatting with you now for little tidbits of information and all of that jazz and all of that. So yeah, nice relaxing weekend. I generally don't, apart from Sunday View, I generally don't involve myself in the news. I tend to basically distance myself from it. And I come back then, you see, fresh on Mondays. Welcome to the show. Real story in today's Irish Independent, which is an Irish broadsheet newspaper. This is a real story, and this is the real headline. Have sex online to limit spread of virus, advises HSE. Young people are being asked in Ireland to avoid having any intimate contact.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Well, we know you wouldn't have stood for it, Amy. You hear that, Tom? The Irish government asking kids to have sex online or over the phone to stop the virus?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
Yes, this is the HSC in Ireland. The HSC in Ireland. It's the Health and Safety Executive. It's the government, essentially. Young people being asked to choose having sex online or over the phone to stop the spread of COVID. The advice is designed to stop people having sex if they don't live together, if possible. It says people should consider masturbating or having phone sex or internet sex to avoid close contact as the country continues to battle against the spread of the virus. Lie back. Pull your trousers down, introduce your lad to Pam and her five sisters. Do it for Ireland, is what you're being told in Ireland. So it's not just the HSE, it's the Irish Pharmacy Union. They've also said people should be washing their hands with soap and water for 20 seconds before and after sex. It's bad enough. The virus cancelled the football. It's bad enough. The virus killed house parties. It's bad enough that the virus destroyed the experience of going to the pub. But now...
And now I'm having to yank myself off round the clock because I haven't got any proper sex with girls.
Yeah. What was that?
And now I'm having to yank myself off round the clock because I haven't got any proper sex with girls.
Rest in peace, Pat Laffin. What a line. I'm having to yank myself off round the clock because I can't have sex with girls. Yank yourself off. But the advice is phone a woman who's in your life but not living with you and have telephone sex. I'll never get a chance to play this again.
And now I'm having to yank myself off round the clock because I haven't got any proper sex with girls.
Yes! Yanking myself off around the clock. Okay, leave it there, leave it there. Move on, move on. Mad time. This is true. Well, it must be if it's in the papers. It's in the Irish Independent today. Ellen Coyle or Ellen Coyne? Pat Laffin. Great actor, played Pat Mustard, the milkman, in the second series of The Great Father Ted. Getting mad, the new restrictions and the new advice gets more and more bizarre and more arbitrary. Dear listener, more and more arbitrary. You'll have to look up arbitrary. I had to look it up myself. It's just nonsensical. And pretty soon, you might have, well, you might have this of a morning. You're watching Sky News. It's 9 o'clock with me, Richie Allen, standing in for Cape Early. The government has introduced new COVID-19 measures for Greater Manchester, which will come into effect from midnight tonight. From tomorrow, you will only be allowed to meet with someone whose surname ends in a vowel on Tuesdays, Thursdays and bank holidays. People under 5'10" cannot go to the supermarket unless they are accompanied by somebody with ginger hair. You'll not be allowed to visit your grandmother unless your grandmother has a beard. And finally, dwarves must observe a new curfew. Now, if you're wondering, a dwarf is someone under 4'10" tall. Or small. From tomorrow evening, dwarves must remain indoors between 8 p.m. and 7 a.m. To make up for this, ITV will be running Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, The Hobbit, and Return of the Jedi back-to-back on a loop during these hours for the duration of the curfew. Keep washing your hands, keep 2 meters apart, and have sex through a glory hole if possible, or just over the phone. Here's Jackie with the sport, eh? That's how mad it's getting, really. It's ridiculous. But on a lighter note, the bingo halls of the Welsh Valleys are back open. The bingo halls. Yes, get in there, boyo. Boyo. Natalie from Mecca Bingo was on Sky News. Who doesn't love the bingo? I love the bingo. Here's Natalie.
Natalie, people love coming to the bingo, don't they? What's the best thing that people have said to you as they've walked back through the door?
As they've walked back through the door, what's the best thing? It's about bloody time you open bingo again. Probably the most common thing.
They're genuinely just happy to be back. They're pleased to see their favourite team members. Come and play their favourite game, see some of their friends. They're just pleased to be back. Yeah, it's been great.
God help them, the bingo players.
What sort of preparation has gone into organising something like this?
Yeah, lots of work has been done, lots of new processes. We've got reduced capacities.
Reduced capacity.
Stickers on all the seats and the tables to make sure that people sit in designated areas.
Stickers on the seats and the tables.
We've got contactless payment.
Contactless payment for the elderly.
You can order food and drink on an electronic iPad.
Ordering food and drink on an electronic iPad. Does Natalie know the average age of the bingo goers of Mecca Bingo? I reckon it's about 76. I want fish and chips. Well, you'll have to order it on the iPad, sir. Just give me fish and chips. This is mad stuff, isn't it?
We've got hand sanitising stations.
Hand sanitising stations are all the rage.
And our teams have undergone quite a lot of training as well in our new ways of working.
Now, usually on a Monday you'd have about 100 people, but today you've got about 59, I understand it, yeah. So just over half. Are people just excited to be back? Is that the main message?
Yeah, they are. We've opened the door and they are really pleased to be back. It's a safe place for them to come back to, enjoy their favourite game.
Their favourite game. I went playing bingo a few times when I was a little boy with my nanny, Kathleen. And for you English types, nanny is how we refer to grandmother. And it was in the Butler Community Centre in St. John's Park in Waterford. I went with my nanny, Kathleen, rest in peace. And if I said it once, I said it 1,000 times. Ireland would have beaten the United States to the moon if we'd rounded up women like my grandmother, Kathleen, and her blue rinse pals and sent them to a space exploration centre in Dublin. These women could play 8 bingo cards at the same time. And I'd have one on one side of me granny. And me Aunt Margaret or Katrina would be on the other side. And she'd be playing, she'd be marking 8 cards. And without even looking at me or my aunt, she'd say, "You have 43. You have 35. Geniuses. We could have beaten the Yanks to the moon. I wasn't impressed when I saw Rain Man as a result of those experiences. Dr. Margaret Harris is everywhere these days, World Health Organization spokeswoman. She's a bit mad She was on Sky News today also. She's Skyping in from her home in Switzerland. She's isolating, and when you see her, she's always in her living room anyway. She thinks that we, the public, are getting too excited in thinking that the virus is basically over, Dr. Catherine Harris.
But I think the message that people got in their heads was, woohoo, we're out of school, you know, it's all over, we can just go back to what everybody calls the normal. They forgot what people like all my colleagues in the WHO and many other people in governments were saying, we have to find a new normal.
New normal. And there was a time early on in this madness when they spoke of the new normal quite a bit and then it died away. But today and yesterday, it's back with a bang, the new normal. The new normal. The presenter then, a hapless character called Neil Patterson, says to her, what a strange virus this is, still being so prevalent in the summer. It's strange, isn't it? It's very strange, Dr. Margaret Harris. This was her response.
Yes, certainly this one has thrown away the respiratory virus playbook.
It's thrown away the respiratory virus playbook.
It.
Who talks like that? Nobody of science or academia would speak like that. I wouldn't imagine anyway.
Is not operating the way a traditional respiratory virus operates. As you say, generally with many respiratory viruses, you would expect to see the peaks, the main infection period during the winter. And usually that's because it relies on us being in crowded conditions for transmission. Now, this virus seems to manage very nicely in the hottest of places. It's raging in Brazil, which is, as you know, is an equatorial country. Australia's in their second outbreak, Australia's in their second outbreak.
I think her dog had enough of the garbage she was talking and just got right stuck right in there.
Your country, Australia's in their second outbreak,
the dog was like, bullshit.
Their first outbreak was during their bushfire season.
Dr. Harris, I sincerely hope that was your dog getting involved in the interview there. It's so sorry. Sounds like we might have to let you go, so we will. Dr. Harris, always lovely to chat to you.
Yeah, the dog just went bullshit. Garbage. Throwing away the respiratory virus playbook and all that crap. When there isn't any challenge coming from any presenter, they can claim whatever they like. They can say whatever they want. Ah, well, let's move on. It's 16 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen radio show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. A BBC Radio 5 Live breakfast this morning, Vaudevillian, a news station no more. It used to be a news station. The programme, 5 Live Breakfast News, they would read a news story and then invite comment from a politician or someone relevant to the story. Now they are doing this. Have a listen. Too funny. Presenter Helen Skelton with a lovely regional accent. This is real. I'm not making this up. Have a listen.
Now, today we're starting a new series talking to people about how COVID-19 has affected them and their families. It's called COVID and Me, and this morning we're going to be talking about funerals. And
it's called COVID and Me. We're starting a new series now, a news channel. Every day we're going to be talking to people about how they've been affected by COVID. It's called COVID and Me. Yeah.
Death of a loved one during the pandemic. Because, of course, lockdown restrictions have left some families struggling with a lack of closure. Katie Rylands is one of those people. Good morning, Katie.
Hi. Hello. Hi.
Oh, that's a sunny morning on a Monday morning.
Yeah, Katie didn't get the memo. You're supposed to sound depressed, Katie. We're bringing you on to talk about your dead grandfather. And we're bringing you on to scare the bejesus out of the listening audience. It's propaganda, Katie. So when we say good morning, at least sound like you're a bit depressed, love.
Struggling with a lack of closure. Katie Rylands is one of those people. Good morning, Katie.
Hi. Hello. Hi.
Oh, that's a sunny morning.
You're right.
I'm so sorry for your loss, Katie, because I understand that you lost your granddad during the strict lockdown in May. Just tell us what his first name was.
His name was Jack Smith.
So yeah. Tell me a bit about Jack and talk me through how that's affected you, because I believe you were pretty close.
Yes, so...
I'm not subjecting you to any more of it. The point has been made by the BBG, by myself. This is crap, isn't it? Served up as breakfast news. Absolute crap. COVID and me. Your grandfather died. Good morning. Ah, good morning! Yeah. Right, let's move swiftly on. Swiftly on. Don't forget Romola D, live from Massachusetts shortly. David Lammy is a Labour MP. You'll know David Lammy. He's a black man and Labour MP, and he's not very popular with the right in the country, with those on the right of politics in the country. They don't like David Lammy. I'm agnostic about David Lammy. I couldn't care less. They're all the same. But he was sitting in for Ian Payne on LBC Radio today, was David Lammy. Yes, I've talked about this a lot. I won't dwell on it. This new phenomenon of politicians presenting radio programmes. I mean, really? Yeah, I've done a lot on it, so I won't get into it now. Anyway, he sat in for Ian Payne. And what David did in the programme was he hosed down the studio with a projectile vomiting of pure horse shit. He says, in his opening monologue, that Russian bots are using his tweets to sow division in the UK. Yes, you heard that right. A sitting Labour MP presenting a national radio programme, or at least a radio programme on a national station, used the opportunity to tell a gullible audience, presumably, that Russian bots are taking his tweets and using them to sow division in the UK. Pray tell, David, how are they doing that?
I know for a fact that some of my tweets, particularly during the post the referendum and Brexit, some of my tweets where I am discussing issues of race, which are important to my constituents, and which you would expect, frankly, of a black Labour MP, they are deliberately dumped in front of people who don't share my views, who weren't even following me, but they're dumped in front of them to wind up the debate and cause unnecessary division. And
I tweet about race as a black man, and Russian bots are taking my tweets and dumping them in front of people who don't follow me to sow division.
Any proof there, David? No? Any proof?
And I've seen the Russian bots doing it.
How do you see the Russian bots doing it?
And I've spoken to experts on...
Which experts exactly? Give us a few names.
On these bots with how they work. And it's still going on today.
Even when you're on the radio?
Despite the fact that we know that it's deliberately manipulating our democracy to wind us all up, to make us all so partisan and so confined in our own...
If I was the managing director of LBC Radio, I would have thrown that bastard off the air mid-show. Dead air is better than that volume of crap. Russian bots are taking my tweets about race and are putting them in front of people on the right to sow division. Give me a break. Pull the other one, son. David Lammy there. 22 minutes past the hour. Enough of that garbage. Monday, August 3rd. Our golden retriever turned 9 months old today. Born on November 3rd last year, she was. So if you get your hands out and count on your fingers, November plus 9 equals August 3rd. August 3rd. Okay, 22 minutes past the hour it is. Let's move swiftly on. David Lammy there. Jimmy Cranky feels like crying. Crying. She does, Jimmy Cranky. Given the COVID briefing today from Bonnie Scotland, Jimmy says, well, I feel like crying when, well, listen yourself.
Across the country and across social media, we're seeing evidence of people, and it is largely younger people, gathering together with little or no physical distancing in place. I've seen pictures on social media over this weekend that, not to put too fine a point on it, made me want to cry looking at them. I know what a hard slog.
It made me want to cry. Looking at them, pictures of young people having fun made her want to cry. It makes me feel I wish I was fucking 20 again. With hair. And no bat wings, because I've got bat wings. Even though I'm fit, 14 stone. It doesn't look like there's a pick on me. But I have bat wings and I'm baldy. So when I look at these photographs on Twitter, I want to get involved. Nicola wants to cry. To cry.
It is every single day right now to try to keep this virus under control. That's a hard slog by people here in the Scottish Government, but even more so at people working in Test and Protect and in our local public health teams across the country. It's a hard slog by the many businesses doing the right thing and, of course, members of the public who continue to make very hard sacrifices right now.
Members of the public and their sacrifices. And she wraps up the train of thought thus. Here she wraps it up here, it's funny.
But every time one person throws caution to the wind and flouts the rules, the reality is they put all of us at risk and they make the job of everybody working to try to control this virus that much harder.
Yes, it's the bloody young. They don't care. For them, it's...
Enjoy yourself and kill a granny is the answer.
Yeah. Bastards, the young. There you are. Have I anything else for you, have I? I don't think I have. I think I've run out of monologue material. Welcome to the show. Do, by the way, tweet and get involved on Twitter. You can converse with other listeners there. You do so by where it says search Twitter, top right-hand side of the page. If you put Richie Allen Show, if you type Richie Allen Show there without any spaces and hit enter, you will see what people are tweeting me and you can engage then. I recommend that even if you disagree, you at least be civil, engage with them and chat away. That's Twitter, 25 minutes past the hour. It's good to be with you. I can't not mark, it must be said, the fact that the family of John Hume announced today that he passed away. I don't know how into your politics you've been over the years, but you should know who John Hume is. John won the Nobel Peace Prize for the part he played in bringing the lasting peace that we've had in Northern Ireland. He died in a nursing home in Derry. He was unwell for some time. He founded or was a founding member of the Social Democratic and Labour Party. We say the SDLP. He was with them, led them until 2001, played a massive part in the peace process. And I never got to interview the man and never met him. But by all accounts, anybody who did meet him or who came across him said that he was a very honourable man. And a lot of people who played their part in the peace process have been taken to the airwaves today in the UK to pay tribute to him, including Gerry Adams, the former president of Sinn Féin, and many others, saying that it wouldn't have happened without this man's perseverance. He was a nationalist, of course, a Republican, but he absolutely forswore against violence. He hated violence and he had no time for the IRA. But a good man. And I was just about getting into production of talk radio around about 1998, 1999. So it is a big time to be involved in news production and talk show production in Ireland. So it was a very big deal. And our yesterday gareva onam, as we would say back home, John Hume, who died aged 83 after a long illness. I'm sure there will be programmes put together in the next few days. And if you're interested in that period of history, do take a look at it and educate yourself, I suppose. Right, 26 and a half minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. We will be joined by Romola D, live from Massachusetts, in a moment. I'm very excited about that. Taking us there is the boss. The boss. If anybody was offended by the language in the first part of the programme, I don't care. That is Bruce Springsteen on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is Monday's programme, August 3rd. Let's get rid of Brucey there. Glorious evening in the northwest of the UK. Thanks for joining me. Very excited about introducing you to my guest, although it must be said a number of listeners have been in contact with me lately to say that they watch the lady's videos on YouTube regularly and ask me why haven't I invited her on. And there was no good answer to that because I watched them myself. So I've invited her on the programme today and thankfully she's agreed to come on. Now, she's an independent investigative journalist and writer, author. She's published several books and they've been very, very well reviewed. You can watch her presentations on YouTube. The channel is Romola D Reports. We'll tweet links, of course, for those of you who are new to her material, to her output. And you can find her on the website everydayconcerned.net. That's everydayconcerned.net. And she is a brilliant and eloquent speaker on many issues, not just the pandemic or plandemic or COVID, but many other issues around tech, the ethics around the development of technology, which is very important, surveillance and much more. So let's welcome to the programme then, live from Massachusetts, it's Romola D. Romola, thanks so much for coming on. How are you?
I'm very good, Richie. Thank you so much for inviting me. Very honoured to be on your show. And that's a dazzling intro. Thank you.
It's lovely. It should have happened long before now, funnily enough. But look, better late than ever anyway. Thanks for giving us your time today. Especially, I didn't give you much notice either. I suppose that we've got as much time as you want us to have. I mean, we can have an hour. We can have an hour and 10 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes. I'd like to ask you, straight off the bat, tell me about when... Go back to February, late February, early March, when we began to hear about this virus that allegedly emerged in the Far East and was going to be a big problem and we might have to change the way we do business and then lockdowns. When this came about, what were you thinking at the time? Was it something that you'd expected? Did it catch you unawares? Because I'll tell you, Romola, it definitely caught me unawares. I was pretty shocked by the speed of it. What about you?
Oh, me too, absolutely. You know, I have to tell you, I was not even looking into pandemics at the time. I'm certainly researching the whole field right now, you know, and discovering quite a bit. But at the time that this all kind of broke, I was actually planning a visit to India. And, you know, I was halfway there in the middle of February. I made a visit to see my family in India and, you know, ultimately got stuck there because of the shutdown. Because first of all, you know, I think Europe shut down the flights, you know, across the world. And so Lufthansa, on which I was booked, shut down their flights. I was stuck in India. Everybody shut down, as you know, first Europe and then the US and then India also shut down the flights. So literally there was no chance of me leaving, but you know, I was in a nice place. I was in Bangalore, no complaints. I had a lovely time there, but it was an extended time and I was actually separated from my daughter who had gotten back earlier. So she was back here in Boston and I was in India. So, you know, and I spent about 4 months there eventually. And so I got to see what unfolded on the ground in India, in Bangalore, in Madras, which is now called Chennai, and all across India. I don't know if you heard about the whole migrant labor scandal, you know, day laborers in every part of India were kind of stuck in their respective states. These are people who worked in construction, in the restaurant industry, in domestic labor, and they had traveled from other states, you know, mostly states on the northeast coast, states like Bihar, Bengal, etc. People stranded in Delhi, people stranded in Andhra Pradesh and Hyderabad, people stranded in Bangalore, in Chennai. And then these people had no way of getting back home. You see, they were denied jobs immediately. Their job line was cut off, their work line was cut off, no income and no way to make a living. And these are day laborers. Literally, they were feeding their families on a daily basis.
I did not know that. I'm sorry, I did not know that. This is really important and interesting information. So these people were told, not only do you have to stay put where you are, but you have no income. There is no job.
Correct.
How
correct.
Stressful. And what sort of numbers are we talking about, Romola? Are we talking about tens of thousands of people? Are we talking about hundreds of thousands?
Hundreds of thousands of people. And, you know, it became a kind of a big deal, but I don't know if it hit the international press that much. I tried to tweet about it as much as I could when once I started to hear about it. And I did a few shows on YouTube, you know, talking about it, giving Corona updates as to what was going on. And I know that journalists in India were covering it on the ground as well. It began to become, it did become a huge scandal inside India. And ultimately, the government did step forward and begin to take action. You know, they started to put out special trains and buses to help these people go home because literally people were walking home in the heat and dying on the way, you know. So the government eventually, I think after a month or so, they began to make a few offerings. You know, they had trains, they had buses, they also set up safe houses, I think. And various of these governments, like the Delhi government, was trying to get people to stay in Delhi, and they were bringing food to them and things like that. So that kind of thing did happen. But, you know, I have to say, I was in India till early July. And they were just getting ready to shut Bangalore down again before I left. And I can tell you that the kind of strictures, the lockdown strictures, the shutdowns everywhere, all the businesses, the small businesses closed, the markets, the farmers markets closed. And this was the worst thing because, you know, you have all these, India is largely agricultural and farmers markets are a big deal in India, you know, and this is how farmers make a living. They supply food to the cities. And these farmers' lives and livelihoods were completely cut short. So we would hear lots of horror stories of people starving, people committing suicide, huge increase in child abuse, huge increase in domestic abuse.
Wow.
So, and the economy totally crashed. So, and that is still the case right now. So in the US, I'm back now. And, you know, and I see that there is a lot of effect here as well. You know, obviously, the economy has been affected. Employment rates have gone up. Unemployment rates have gone up, etc. But in places like India, it's much, much worse.
That's, I was going to ask you, listening to that, how, at least where you were, how did the local people take the introduction of the measures? Here in the UK, largely or mostly, Ramola, people have just acquiesced, they've bent down to it, and, you know, they've gone along with it, which I find very depressing, really. What about people in Bangalore? What did they do? Did they just say, okay, we've got to do this, or was there any resistance?
I did not see any resistance,
no.
I have to say. It's exactly as you outline in the UK. It was very depressing to me as well. My own family, my own cousins, you know, they completely bought the Kool-Aid about this incredible pandemic. And they all believed, I mean, they fully believed that, and they still believe that there is a terrible pandemic. And they've got to do what the government tells them to do. They've got to wear the masks in the stores. And when they go outside, they've got to stay at home. And this was the worst. You know, people happily abandoned their older relatives to their own devices. I think some of them made some efforts to get food to them and so on and so forth. But, you know, for the most part, people actually believed the government rather than their own thinking through what was going on. You do not abandon your family when there is a calamity or a crisis.
No.
But here the government was telling them there's a huge calamity and you've got to stay in your house and not see your relatives. And they all fell in line. That's totally the case. And, you know, when you go to the stores and everything, that's what you saw people wearing the masks, keeping the... By the way, that's not social distancing. That's anti-social distancing.
Yeah.
You know, that they've got us all doing. Of course, in India, you know, with the numbers and the stories and the buses and so forth, I don't think it's a bad idea to distance a little bit.
Right, fair enough, but, yeah.
Seriously, but on the other hand, honestly, it to see people falling in line, standing outside the stores, and this is the worst thing, you know, in June is summertime in Bangalore and Chennai, and people are forced to stand outside for 15 minutes at a time in the blazing heat, wearing a mask or wearing a scarf and, you know, literally sweating. And as you're going into the store, you're being hit with one of those infrared thermometer checks. So it's like, it's a wonder that, you know, people aren't just considered COVID just for standing in the heat and getting hot.
Yeah. And this is these are things that we would have seen in Hollywood films over the years. And we might have watched, you know, we would have watched them, Ramola, and we probably would have laughed, or not laughed, but we would have thought, imagine a dystopian world like that. We might have contemplated that. And for many of us, we could never have envisaged it. But here we have it today. In Ireland today, you have the Irish government recommending that young people don't have sexual relations anymore, or at least for the foreseeable future. No, honest to God, this is the government, the HSE in Ireland, saying, listen, it's best if you have phone sex or if you have online sex. Keep apart. Don't do it. I mean, as an Irish man myself,
incredible.
We're you know, we're a revolutionary people, the Irish. You know, we kept you know, we kept the British Empire at bay for hundreds of years. And you think...
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying, Romola? And now it's like they just go along with it and they do what they're told. You are... I mean, I've really enjoyed the last few days because I started getting messages from people last week and even the week before to invite you on. And I'm like, I know Romola D. And of course, I have seen your videos before and we're connected on Twitter. So I've obviously been doing a bit of watching, a bit of voyeurism there. I've been looking at your videos and stuff.
And you're very welcome to watch my videos. They're brilliant. I'm actually flattered that people actually watch
no,
my
they
videos
should
and
because,
telling you to have me on.
Oh, no, they should. Romola D Reports is the YouTube channel. And you're listening to a very, very eloquent and very lucid Romola D. And that's the way that's how she does her journalism. She's an investigative, independent journalist and writer who's published several books, very popular, and has done a lot of really good work around the development of technology and what it's going to mean for us as a species going forward. She's ringing the alarm, sounding the alarm about this stuff. And so, of course, COVID then and the reaction to it is right up your street then. So where did you begin to look into the virus, the genesis of it, and start looking under stones for information that was being suppressed? How did you go about that? That obviously began during your stay in Bangalore.
Yes, absolutely, Richie. You know, well, one of the things I started to do when I realized, for one thing, that I wasn't going anywhere for a long time, I was probably going to be in India for a while, that's when I decided to simply run my reports from there. And so, you know, I started broadcasting from my brother's room. And yeah. You can see those videos now. Yeah. So I was actually interviewing people in the States and in the UK from there. And it was great. But I also interviewed people from Cambodia and from Indonesia from there, which was actually easier in terms of the time difference. And I spoke to people in Australia as well. That was easier in terms of the time difference. But of course, with the US, it's like 10 hours. You know, it's a 10-hour time difference to the East Coast and a 12-hour time difference to the West Coast. But it was really fun doing those interviews. And what I did was I tried to connect with doctors who were speaking out, doctors who had a connection already, who were writing about what was going on in the U.S. I spoke to Dr. John Reiser. I spoke to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. I spoke to Dr. Zara Bourgeois. She is a Canadian homeopath. Very eloquent on Twitter and somebody who researches a great deal and who was the first person that I knew of and who spoke to me, at any rate, about the terrain theory as opposed to the germ theory, which is what is driving this entire pandemic thinking and is driving the entire 50 years of immunology and vaccine research and thinking behind vaccines that kind of bolsters and holds up the WHO and all of these other international organizations that are striving to convince all of us around the world that if only we wore a mask and kept out these pesky little viruses, we would be healthy forever. And as, you know, most of us know on the planet, when we get sick, we don't run and look for vaccines. We, you know, go to the kitchen and look for hot ginger tea or something like that. And our first step is the home remedy, you know, and then we go on to whoever we consider our doctors or our caregivers, whether they are homeopaths or whether they're naturopaths, they're herbalists, or if they are even our Western allopathic primary care physician. We don't go to the doctor and say, you know, it looks like I've got a terrible cold. It's lasting forever. Do you have a vaccine for me? You know, that is hardly what anybody does. Although it's entirely possible that the doctor will tell you to take the flu vaccine if you believe in the Western medical allopathic system, which I absolutely don't, and which many people don't. But I know that, you know, people have faith in their doctors and there are good doctors and bad doctors and so on and so forth. So I'm not here to raise down doctors by any means. But the notion of vaccines as being some kind of band-aid or some kind of complete end to the story over here when somebody is sick is very foreign to the thinking of most people who just get a cold or a flu. And see, this is the thing about COVID. When it comes down to it, it just seems to be a form of the flu. I watched a video that was an interview by Dr. Ben Lynch with his son's friend. Now, his son's friend actually picked up COVID and so actually experienced having it and was talking about what he really experienced, what it was, a scratchy throat, having a fever, and then feeling very weak, having a cough, and then recovering. And really how he recovered was, you know, with vitamins and getting off these fever suppressants like paracetamol, but letting the fever take its course, letting the body kind of evict the virus by itself, and you know, then getting better.
Loads of fluids. This is how we were brought up. We were brought up like that whenever we got anything like that. Loads and loads of fluids, bed rest. As you said, take your vitamin C, your vitamin D, and you'll just sweat it out of you eventually. You'll be a bit rotten for 3 or 4 days, but then you'll get over it. And now, what you're talking about here is very important, and I'm glad you brought this up. This notion, because this is a relatively new phenomenon, the vaccine, the notion of the vaccine as a cure, as opposed to a preventative. They talked about vaccines for years, as in, oh, have the vaccine now, and, you know, you might avoid the flu in the winter. These days, you are quite right, and I don't think anybody else has picked up on this except you. They're talking about vaccines in terms of a cure. I mean, they're even saying no return to normal, no back to life before March 2020, unless we have the vaccine. So the vaccine is being talked of as a cure for the misery that has been inflicted upon us during this lockdown. So this is very good stuff, Romola. And
that's correct. It's outrageous. No, I think people need to resist this very, very firmly. And people need to simply stop and think about it. You know, even those people who take vaccines as prophylactics, as preventatives, and who really, apparently, you know, honestly, I don't know anybody who is into science and cannot look into vaccine research today and not understand that the vaccines of today are a very, very different thing than the vaccines of yesterday.
Hell no, this is good. This is good, Romola. I'll tell you why I've interrupted you there, because this program gets... No. I should be sorry. I'm interrupting you here because the program gets a lot of very skeptical people listening, which is no bad thing. Mm-hmm. And when somebody like you says something like this, it's my duty to challenge you. This is good. So the vaccine or the makeup of the vaccine in 2020 is vastly different to how it used to be. Explain that.
Well, from what I understand, well, first of all, the vaccine schedule right now in the US, you've got an immunization schedule. Kids can't even get into school. You know, the public schools, even the private schools, follow what the public schools do over here. Without this vaccination schedule taken care of, and you actually have to prove to the school nurse that your child has gotten these 60 vaccinations by age 5, or else she can't get into school. This is outrageous. And it's become like the exception rather than the norm for people to claim exemptions. And the only exemption you're permitted, of course, in states like Virginia, which is where, you know, I had my child and had to put her through school and experienced all of this for myself, is a religious exemption. So you're literally obliged to say, yeah, it's a religious exemption. And then in actuality, it should be a religious exemption for everybody. Yeah. When you look into what's in the vaccines, you know, look at the number of toxins in vaccines. You know, not only do they have things like formaldehyde and mercury, thimerosal, they've got things like a fetal tissue. They've got stuff from chicken eggs. They've got things from various cell lines related to animals. So there's a whole lot of stuff. And, you know, in fact, from what I'm reading and researching now, very often the vaccine manufacturer does not have in writing what exactly all of the ingredients are and where they came from, where the cell lines, where the cell cultures came from, because they've been passed down over the generations in various labs. No doubt starting at some point from, you know, some bioweapon lab somewhere.
This is important because if I had a child, if my missus and myself had a child, which we don't, maybe in the future, please God. But if we went to a doctor when the boy or the girl was 4 or 5 or whatever, and we asked for a list of everything that's in there, from what I understand, you're right. The doctor wouldn't be able to divulge that information. More than likely, the doctor wouldn't know.
More than likely, the doctor wouldn't know. And a lot of pediatricians have been questioned and have actually said they have no idea. Now, they actually take it for granted because, you know, there is a lot of hype. There's a lot of propaganda being put out by mainstream media, as I'm sure you're aware, Richie, that, you know, saying that vaccines are safe and vaccines are what have saved lives. Vaccines are what are keeping people around the world from deadly diseases like smallpox and polio, etc. Of course, when I say the word polio, I instantly think of Bill Gates and what he did in India. 500,000 children given a live oral polio vaccine, which actually gave them polio.
If I was in the same room as you now, I'd kiss you. I'll tell you why. No, because I hadn't made a note of this. I'm kicking myself now. I should have made a note of this. I'm so glad you said this because I would have forgotten to mention it. The reason is a lot of people say that the Gates story or the Gates India story is nonsense. It's been called fake news by the mainstream media. The mainstream media says that there's no evidence that Gates' work in India led to any vaccine injuries. Now, I don't believe
that's a big lie. No, it's true.
Tell the story then. Romola D is our guest. Great start of the week. Great journalist. Delighted she's on. Tell us the story then, Romola, about Gates in India.
Well, I don't know if I know the whole story as yet. I will research further and hope to write further about this. But I can tell you that a lot has been actually covered up. And that's one of the reasons why we are not getting any information here in the West about what really happened in India. But yes, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation worked in India through the World Health Organization. And what they did was they actually administered a live polio vaccine administered orally, you know, not as an injection, not as a vaccination in your arm, but literally they had kids open their mouths and they dropped the stuff under their tongue. And hundreds and thousands of these children actually developed polio because they were given the live poliovirus. And what this means is these children are suffering in villages. You know, literally they have lost the use of their limbs. They are literally lying around. You know, these are children lying around. There were articles on this a few years ago, and I remember reading about this. This has been heavily hushed up.
It's true story.
It's been heavily hushed up.
It's true. Listen, I'm convinced it's true. And not because I want it to be true. I've seen those stories as well.
Yeah. I've seen pictures, Richie. And literally, if I'd had time, I would have investigated this. And also because, you know, India was shut down, I couldn't even travel inside India. But next time I go, I'm going to try to really make an effort to find out more. I'll tell you, I did try to contact the three ladies who sued the Gates Foundation. And they sued actually because of another case. It wasn't the polio case. It was, I think, Hep B or Hep C. 24 women, young girls or women found they were sterilized after they got this, and they had all sorts of other bad side effects. So, you know, the Gates Foundation was sued, and this information is online, but the three people involved, you know, did not respond to my calls and my emails, I was unable to pursue it.
Well, just to remind our listeners, it's 5 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got Romola D on the line from Massachusetts. It's really important to be talking about this today. We've covered quite a bit so far. We've been talking about Bill Gates' efforts in India. And one of the things I discovered some years ago when I was doing a radio show in Spain, and it was very depressing really, was how companies like Gates' company and, of course, the spin-off companies that, you know, when you look down from Gavi and all these other organisations, how often they take drugs to places in the world, you know, parts of the world where they can find people easily who don't have a lot of money and don't have a lot going for them in terms of their career prospects or their life prospects, and how they can give them pennies basically to be participants in these trials. And if you start scratching the surface on that, you can see what Gates and his cronies have done in Central America, in South America, in the Far East as well. It's disgusting, really. And I figured it
in
out.
Africa and
isn't
India,
it, Romola?
Yeah.
And, you know, I looked into Gates in Ireland and I found out pretty quickly that he's donated massive sums of money to universities in Ireland. And I'm guessing, I haven't done it yet, but I'm guessing if you look at the great Indian universities, I bet you Gates has got his, academics on his payroll. I'm sure he's donated a lot of money in India as well.
It's entirely possible. And I can tell you that he also works through the World Health Organization, you know.
Yeah.
They seem to work in tandem. Right now, the Indian Ministry of Health has actually taken millions of dollars from the World Health Organization to push through this new vaccine and, you know, to also for various other vaccine and preparedness initiatives. You know, that's one of their big catchwords, preparedness. So there is a huge deception behind this entire world takeover by the World Health Organization, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and other foundations that have literally forced a kind of form of thinking on people around the world, including and especially, as you say, people in countries which, you know, I call them post-colonial or exploited countries, in Asia, in South America, Central America, etc., places where there are people who are indeed desperate and also people who have been kept desperate. You see, when I go to India and I see what's going on over there, what I see is that this class warfare that the world is engaged in has been engaged in very deliberately. People are being kept in their little places on the socioeconomic ladder. People are being kept illiterate. People are being kept, you know, undereducated because there is a need to use people as human resources, you know, and whether it be in factories or in construction, you know, or in domestic labor or whatever. And this actually relates back to, you know, I'm just thinking of depopulation initiatives and what Henry Kissinger pulled off in 1974 with his little national security memorandum, where he actually talks about fertility decline, where he wants, you know, where he and his pals wanted fertility decline around the world. And therefore, they laid out all the ways in which fertility decline could be ensured. And one of those ways was to keep people undereducated,
yeah.
You know, and just bring them up to a level of education that would be enough to get them to get involved in family planning and accept these family planning and sterility measures that were being also rolled out by the WHO. So the WHO, yeah, along with that, is of course rolling out vaccines. And boy, see, to me, that is one of my biggest interests, to see how they've pulled it off over the last 50 years, because they've pulled it off at the level of propaganda and at the level of deception through language. You know, that's first and foremost. And then, of course, the other aspect is money, right? It's through bribery, as
bribery,
you say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it happens at the level of governments. They've got whole governments buying into this, you know. So that happens with money.
It's very important you mentioned governments, and not only governments, but opposition politicians. They're all in lockstep with this. I mean, so-called socialist parties. I mean, there's no such thing as a socialist party anymore. They don't exist really, maybe still in parts of South America. But no genuine socialist could ever stand over or could ever endorse mandating vaccines. It's completely anathema to the socialist mindset. You know, we should be able to drag you to get a test. I want to read a few comments. Before I read a few comments on Twitter, there are lots of them. Tell me this, Romola. I remember speaking to Vandana Shiva on the radio quite a few times over the years, but going back quite a few years. And I felt at the time that India was really earmarked from day one for biotech and Monsanto's evil, disgusting Terminator seeds, their horrible products. And I wondered, was that to do with the depopulation agenda? You know, were they trying to fill people up with foods that were genetically modified, because it also had some effect on fertility? I mean, I don't know if there's any truth in that, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I wouldn't touch anything that was genetically modified if I could help it. I don't know what you think about that.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised either. And I don't know if you've spoken to Kevin Galilei, you know, the UN scholar who's been reading all of the UN documents. He knows exactly how they've been pulling it off. Because, yes, depopulation has been a kind of mission and mission objective of the UN, apparently since the time they started. And one of the ways they've pulled it off is with food supplements and with GMOs. Yeah. So GMOs, Monsanto, and Monsanto's work everywhere in the world is not just suspect. I think if you go into the documentation and actually trace it back, you will see the connections. Kevin Galladay is a good person, I think, to talk to about that. In India, as you know, one of the things they did was golden rice, I think. They said that they were supplementing the rice with vitamin A.
Yeah.
And it was actually GMO rice, and it's all Terminator seeds. So you see, the Terminator seeds are what not just that the farmers objected to, but also that it actually began to cause real economic hardship. Because what really happens was, you know, the Terminator seeds are patented to Monsanto.
That's right.
So each year the farmers would have to buy, and they didn't have the money to buy, so they would have to take loans from the banks to buy stashes of this seed to grow their harvest year after year.
Some of our listeners will be hearing this for the first time, and I understand that. Ignorance is excusable because we live in the West and we get BBC and Sky. None of the UK broadcast companies, media companies, covered BT Cotton. And
I was going to say BT Cotton.
Unbelievable. I mean, this is anti-God. It's anti-life. It's anti-nature. It's anti-humanity to design a Terminator seed. I mean, for thousands and thousands of years, men and women have sown and then saved seed and replanted. It's the most naturally, it's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Along comes these companies and say, oh, well, we've got our own seeds. And of course, they bribed and bought off governments. And they were allowed to operate in India. And tell us this, Ramola, a conservative estimate. Again, tens of thousands of farmers committed suicide, right?
Correct. I think I read the figure 18,000 at one point.
My God.
So literally, you know, these are farmers, you know, and this is the saddest thing. In India, these farmers are being kept uneducated, illiterate, and here they are, their livelihood, as you say, their traditional livelihood for decades and centuries, right? This is their tradition and culture. They've been living on the land, off the land, and they've been feeding the world's population, feeding India's population at any rate, you know, and here they are obliged to give it all up and suddenly run after Monsanto. And, you know, these are people who began to feel the shame of being unable to support their own families. And that's really why they killed themselves. And, you know, the irony is a lot of them killed themselves drinking Roundup.
That's right.
The herbicide, you know, which was also brought in by Monsanto.
Which we know is a carcinogen anyway. And again, the fact that they continue to contest this, it's a bloody carcinogen. Let me read a few tweets. The listeners are really animated. Load of interest, lots of interest in Ramola being on the programme. Ramola D is our guest today. And if you haven't checked out our YouTube channel, Ramola D Reports, please do subscribe to it and share the videos. You're getting a flavour of her reporting on this show today. It's very good. It's exceptional. Steve says, I do talk to people on social media. It does have its uses when it comes to sharing this information. Sooty tweets, Gates' update to my Windows 10 is absolutely terrible. No way would I allow this maniac mess with my DNA hard drive. Laurie is listening to the programme in West Virginia. And Laurie says, Richie and Ramola were not even allowed the religious exemption from vaccines in West Virginia anymore. It's maddening, she says. Let me just.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that. Lately, it's changed.
It's changing all the time, is it? You might come back on that in a minute. Let me scroll on down. Lots and lots of interest in Ramola today. Top marks to Ramola, says Cave Hillbilly. I love these Twitter names, Ramola. Cave Hillbilly.
Yeah, seriously.
Fantastic. For talking about kitchen remedies and the failure of allopathic medicine. I was not aware of Ramola's work. Consider yourself followed, madam, he says. There you are.
Oh, thank you.
Very formal, very formal. You've done so much work on tech and surveillance throughout your career. And this vaccine, it's not just about injecting us with tidal wave of pus and garbage. That's obviously a thing. Depopulation is obviously a thing. But the vaccine itself is part of a surveillance agenda that I, again, didn't think would come about so soon. I thought it would be a few years down the road before we would get there. But the vaccine surveillance and these passports they're talking about, Ramola, these health passports and digital passports. Now, I know you've known about these, haven't you? You've known that this was coming.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I've known that this was the kind of thing that was in the works, but I am as surprised as you that it's been rolled out at such speed and it continues to be rolled out at such speed. But, you know, to me, what it tells me, because, you know, as you know, I have indeed been following the surveillance technology space for a long time now. I've been following the military space. I've been looking at the weapons they've been developing. And I've been also seeing that biometrics and bioweaponry has been also, you know, really rising in terms of how this tech is expanding and how foolishly tech companies around the world, including in India, by the way, are simply falling in with all of the requirements of governments in terms of developing these monitoring technologies, these sensor technologies, which completely obliterate privacy. There is no privacy. You know, the entire sensor technology world is all about monitoring your breath, monitoring your heartbeat, getting under your skin. Right now, I think people have heard about this, right? So what they want for this COVID pass is they want to do biometric screening. They want to put nanotech inside under your skin, which can immediately determine when you get a fever so that they can activate their little COVID mechanisms, you know, their emergency, you know, siren mechanisms, yeah, to call out to the rest of the government that, oh, you know, here's this person over here who is now reflecting a higher temperature, so therefore she must be getting COVID, or, you know, she's got to be tested immediately for, you know, viruses, et cetera, et cetera. So this is, as you say, you said earlier that, you know, it's sort of like living in a sci-fi movie. That is exactly how it is. I really, that was a great analogy, Richie, and I think that's what I think when I go to the grocery store and I see people wearing masks around me. So it's like, that's where we are today, where a lot of tech companies, a lot of governments have said yes, have said okay to all of these overarching edicts from above to increase surveillance, to increase monitoring, and to use technology at the nano level inside the biological mechanism of the body to completely take the body over. So, you know, this is where bodily autonomy is being attacked, bodily sanctity, bodily sovereignty is being attacked. And this is why I think that, you know, literally the rubber needs to meet the road here. People need to put their foot down on the brakes and say no. Everybody around the world has got to say no. You've got to say no now. You know, don't wait for tomorrow. You've got to say no now. And say it in as many ways as you find appropriate, you know. And there are many ways to do this peaceably and nonviolently, but very, very firmly. You've got to let the tech companies know. You've got to let your local city councils and your governments know. Let your MPs know. Let your politicians know. This is unacceptable. You know, a vaccine is not a cure. And these kinds of invasive surgical interventions and medical interventions, which are what, you know, nanotech inside the body really represent, are simply unacceptable because they are indeed, as you say, they are trying to create a new world. They're trying to foist a new world upon us where we accept that, you know, we need to submit to this COVID pass. We need to submit to these external measures taken on us in order to move forward. That's got to be unacceptable to people, you know, and you've got to say no right now.
It's dreadful, you know. Do you want to go back to the way it was when you were relatively free? Well, do what we tell you then. Take the vaccine and carry the application on your phone. So again, so many comments. Romola D is our guest. Amanda Thompson tweets, sadly, fact checkers recently have been saying it's false to say Gates has injured India's children and women. That's right. I've seen people having Facebook page, not pages, but posts have been deleted. That's because it's true, of course, Amanda. And Spiro Skouras, who's a great friend of the programme, is a great journalist himself in his own right. He says, Richie, I'd love to hear Romola's take on the military delivering the vaccine in the US per Trump. And again, this is incredible. I mean, he's on the record, Trump, as saying they would use the military. Here in the UK, Romola, I don't know if you're aware of this, but on our news programmes recently, it has been suggested that car parks be taken over and, say, concourses in big shopping malls taken over to basically harass and cajole people into having the vaccine. So, you know, if you and I were married, right, we'd go out on a Saturday afternoon and we'd be walking through our local shopping mall and they'd be there with their stations. They'd be saying, oh, you two, have you had it? No. Why? Well, you should have it. All that sort of stuff. So what about Spiro's point about Trump's comments and the US military delivering the vaccine? Again, we're back to sci-fi movie, aren't we?
Totally sci-fi movie. And boy, I'm really honored that Spiro is watching, listening and sending in questions. So I really love his videos and I listen to his reports and everything. So, you know, with Trump, the military, etc., Trump has gone back and forth. And this is what I find a little bit interesting, because at one point Trump said he actually made the statement that the vaccines would not be mandated. He's also made the statement the masks would not be mandated, right? So I'm actually very hopeful that that is indeed the case and the military will not be pressed into action to force people to take the vaccine and these mandates will not occur. That's my hope. I guess I'm optimistic. But I can tell you, I've been looking at some of the contracts, you know, the DoD contracts, and yeah, a lot of these companies are now being given contracts to develop, to manufacture all sorts of things, manufacture the material for the masks, to, you know, supply masks, to supply the tests, you know, we're talking in the number, in millions, and doses of vaccine also in millions. So it seems like right now they're stockpiling and they're trying to kind of they're taking material steps to have the stuff handy. And then I think ideologically, they are trying to prepare us for some kind of compulsory or mandatory vaccine down the road. And also, by the way, in conjunction with mandatory testing. This is why I'm saying, you know, people have got to say no right now. I mean, all of this is BS in my point of view. You've got to say no to the testing. You've got to say no to considering, to me, COVID is a non-issue. When you look at what this virus is really doing, it's a flu. It's like a normal flu. Give me a break. You know, it's like everybody can get over the flu, except perhaps the people whom we always see as most vulnerable in our society, right? The super elderly or the very young.
Yeah.
Okay, you protect those. We do consider them vulnerable populations. All right, you protect those. But the rest of us, you know, we would be healthy. And I think many people have said this, I'm just echoing it. If we had access to fresh air, sunshine, exercise, nutrition, vitamins, you know, good social relations, nice communities, and so on and so forth.
There's no
That's
money,
what we
there's
need
no,
for our health.
Yeah. Listen, there's so much to get through. Ramola D is our guest. I can't argue with any of that. I do like to argue with my guests, but I can't argue with you today. She's a terrific investigative reporter. Ramola D Reports is the YouTube channel. So much to get through. They're talking here today. The big news in the UK today is that two new tests have been developed. They allege that they've got a new test that will determine within 90 minutes if you're COVID positive or not. And they are triumphantly reporting that the test is so sophisticated that it can differentiate between the flu and COVID. Now, what's really strange about that is no journalist in the UK has picked up on why are they bragging so much that this new test can differentiate between COVID and flu? Are you admitting, basically, that you have given people COVID diagnosis when they've actually had the flu? If so, well, the whole thing is going to fall apart like a badly stacked house of cards. I've got to ask you this because you're very tech savvy. I've interviewed over the years a number of men and women who've worked in technology, people like Chris Busby, who's a mm-hmm. lovely man, a real gentleman, and a real expert in non-ionizing radiation. He believes, Chris, now he's got no opinion, or at least he hasn't made any claims about 5G and the virus, but he does believe that 5G, millimeter wave technology, the radiation, he believes he's seen enough evidence that if somebody's exposed to it often enough, they could develop the chronic fatigue and they could develop, you know, the headaches and feeling lousy all the time, really debilitating illnesses. And a number of people have said that as 5G is being switched on in more and more places, and maybe people will feel the effects of that, will COVID maybe be used as some sort of an excuse for that? Because lately, the latest buzzword about COVID is that it never really goes away, that it stays around forever and ever,
right,
and gives you all these problems. So I'm not going to, I'm agnostic about whether 5G, because it's, there are so many places where it isn't operational. And I think some people have been a bit, they've been a bit hasty in talking about 5G and COVID. But when this great scientist said to me that the 5G will do things that are very flu-like and very, you know, very, very debilitating, like, you have to wonder, have you any opinion on that, Romola?
Well, I have to say, I've also followed that for quite some time now. And right from the beginning, you know, it seems like the people on those cruise ships that got sick, you know, 5G was deployed on those cruise ships. And then all of the places around the world where 5G had been rolled out had these very high cases of COVID. So yeah, those correlations cannot be denied. Those actually occurred. And if you've listened to that Vodafone whistleblower, you know, that's what he says. Yeah. He says it's 5G that's creating these symptoms and creating this so-called disease, but it's not really COVID. What it does is it has the same kind of effects, and it causes cellular poisoning is what he says. You know, it's 5G is causing cellular poisoning, and there's all these exosomes that are kind of being pushed out from the cells and so forth. And that's what's being picked up by these tests as COVID. And as you noted earlier, Richie, these tests don't actually pick up anything specific.
No.
And that's what Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has spoken about quite extensively as well. And many other doctors I know, you know, it just picks up kind of RNA debris, a trace of whatever cold or flu or whatever you might have had in the last 6 months to a year. And it's not at all any kind of proof that you have COVID-19. And Dr. Rashid Buttar has said that probably everybody is going to test positive for this, because we all have some kind of exosomes in our system, you know. So it's very interesting that you say that there are now these two tests that are going to figure out immediately that you have COVID as opposed to the common flu. And the question then becomes, well, what are the implications, even if you have COVID, you see? But so anyway, coming back to the 5G thing and what's happening right now, I think people are looking at that entire scenario all over again, because as far as non-ionizing radiation goes, by the way, and as far as millimeter wave radiation, as which is part of that non-ionizing radiation spectrum, goes, when you look at the military documents and you see the bio effects, yeah, the bio effects are very similar to what COVID is talking about. You know, you could get headaches and migraines, you could have irritability, you could have rashes on your skin, things like that. There are a whole range of bio effects.
Here's the question, so, then. Here's the question, my new and very learned friend. Here's the question. Is it possible, then? I mean, we can't say this, and I know for the skeptical listeners, this is a step too far. So I've got to put my hands up and say, I am not saying this because I have no evidence, but I'm prepared to consider it. Is it possible that late last year, knowing that the rollout of 5G technology was going to have an impact on people, that they came up with the COVID story? Or am I totally wrong there? Because there is other evidence going back to 2010, and I think you mentioned earlier, going back years, that they've been planning pandemics for years as a means of introducing stricter controls over people. So it's all so confusing, really, Romola.
It is confusing, and that's one of the things that's one of the questions I've also asked myself. And as I've tried to make sense of this landscape, you know, most definitely for 50 years or more, they've been planning this. And as you know, over the last 20 to 30 years, they've been rolling out these pandemics, right?
Yeah.
We've all lived through the swine flu, the Zika, the etc. All of these, you know, pandemics have been rolled out in swift succession. And here we are now, it's 2020, it's 2019 and 2020, and we have this COVID-19 being unleashed on us, but also being unleashed on us in a very methodical, mass systemic way, where clearly there's been massive organizational thinking behind this, where they have planned to stop the world. They literally plan to shut down the world. They've succeeded, they've accomplished that, and they are trying to put us through more. And you know, you can clearly see where their end game is, which, you know, it's our job to stop, which is the reason I hope we're having conversations like this, so that people all understand that, you know, the gravity of the situation and also the power of the individual human voice to say no. That's, I firmly believe in that. But anyway, so looking back, and then in terms of 5G again, 5G is a cover-up. You know, COVID is a cover-up for 5G. Yes, you know, people have floated different theories to me. One of them is COVID is a cover-up for 5G, yes, because every time there was any kind of major technology rollout, radiation rollout, you know, there was some kind of pandemic going back to the time of the Spanish flu, etc. Okay, so that's one theory. And then the other theory that I find really interesting, actually, is that about sovereignty. I don't know if you've been covering sovereignty in your shows lately.
No.
But... yeah, I would suggest that's where the real juice is. And I think that's something everybody needs to look at right now.
As in national sovereignty, Romoli, you're talking about the sovereignty of any given nation or bodily or human sovereignty.
Human individual sovereignty, what I'm talking about. And it's connected to that whole, you know, story of the legal fiction, the straw man, the Sestakovsky Act. You're familiar with all of that, right? How governments are all corporations, really. And, our birth certificates hand us over to these corporations. And we're all being securitized and traded on the stock market through our all-cap names. Our legal fictions of the all-cap name, or the straw man, as it's called, which is a stand-in for a corporation. So we are being made into individual corporations and being traded. And somebody's making a lot of money off of us. But in the process, we are being enslaved because we're seen as dead at birth, lost at sea. Does this make any sense?
It does. And it's been a long time since we discussed this on the program, but I've discussed it with... Yeah, this is really, really important. And this is going back... this is going back centuries, isn't it?
It is going back centuries. It's going back, actually, very interestingly, to 1666 in the time of the Great Plague of London and the Great Fire of London. You know, it goes back to that time period.
You want to give our listeners, Romola, do you want to give our listeners a beginner's guide to that in a few paragraphs, if you want? It's I'm fascinated by it. From the time you were born, basically, the birth certificate is really important. Tell us about that or what you've come to understand anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, it seems like what's really happening is, and this all goes back, you can actually find the Sestakovsky Act on the UK government website. I'm just pulling it up over here. And, you know, if we were on video, I could show it. But it's written in that medieval English as well. So it's like an act for redress of inconveniences by want of proof of the deceases of persons beyond the seas or absenting themselves upon whose lives estates do depend. So anyway, interestingly enough, if you go in and read, you know, you'll have to read a translation of this English, I think, to understand what it's all about. But basically, you know, this is all within mercantile and admiralty law, which is apparently the law of the sea. And all of us in the world are under this law of the sea, except if you actually break away from it and you actually make a statement and you know, make what is called a live life claim or declare yourself alive. So,
this is strange, isn't it? Because I've had this out with people before. While I think you are absolutely right to say that, I've argued with people in the past about the likelihood that in any court of law in this country that a judge would listen to you and would accept your right to make that statement and to make that break. This is the thing. What you're talking about is essentially right, from what I understand myself. You've read more about it than I have. We are owned from the time we are born by the Crown Corporation, right? Effectively.
That's right. And you know, the thing is, in terms of courts operate within that legal fiction. So once you enter the court, once you accept the name, you know, because basically you're given this all caps name, which is not really you, the living human being, but it's the name that they are actually speaking to the name. They're speaking to your driver's license. But once you accept that name and you kind of engage in what's called an adhesion contract in a courtroom when you answer to the name, and so you are adhering yourself to the straw man or the all caps name, and so you become the person who's, you know, prosecuted and convicted and so on and so forth. But if you stayed outside the courtroom, if you stayed outside the court system, and you could actually lay claim to your life and yourself as a living being. And the reason I brought up sovereignty at all in the first place, Richie, is because right now what's happening is many people are waking up to this understanding of the straw man about sovereignty, about this legal fiction, and so on and so forth, and how you are being seen as a corporation and you need to be seen as a living being. So literally the laws that are being made, well, there are many things about the laws that are being made, I think. One is the laws are made on paper. The courts, apparently courts exist only within paper, on paper. There's so many concepts that are actually mind-blowing. I think it would take a whole hour to sit and talk about it.
So there
are many, many aspects to this, but people are beginning to learn about it, and there are many groups. I don't know if you have seen the videos being made by Romney Stewart in Australia called the Justinian Deception Channel.
No, I'm making notes now as you're speaking there. Romilly
fabulously Stewart. Interesting and wonderfully done videos where he actually goes into language as well. And see, this is the other aspect of it. Language, we have been hugely defrauded by the language. So apparently the language that we are using right now is a very bastardized form of English, which really doesn't mean what we think it means. And this is the same language that courts are operating in, that contracts are written in. And therefore, contracts don't really have the kind of meaning and, teeth. They don't have the solidity that we ascribe to them.
Yeah.
And by this means, we've been defrauded by governments as well. So these are huge issues, actually, to talk about.
They're really good. That what you're saying there about, it's true. Jordan Maxwell is an old friend of mine. He's been on with me since the late 2000s. And got into the meaning of words and admiralty and maritime law, and echoes everything you're saying there. And you're right to make the point that these contracts have power because of our faith in them more than anything. And there's a lot to be said about that as well. Our belief in their trustworthiness or their legitimacy, when in fact they're not legitimate. It's huge.
Correct. Though. And you see, what happens is when we don't understand the language or the language fraud that's been imposed on us, what happens is we have faith in the contracts, we believe in them, but in actuality, the person making the contract on the other side has an awareness of the fraud and has still used the language in that way anyway. So that's, a sort of a classic example of a real racket, right? A kind of a language racket.
Let me say this. We've got Romola D. Romola's going to stay with me, hopefully, for another 10 to 15 minutes if you've got time, because we never agreed on a time, did we? But thanks for coming on. Romola D reports at the YouTube channel. Great guest today. A lot of interest in this conversation on Twitter. You'll see the tweets yourself later on. Romola, a lot of complimentary tweets, a lot of interesting points being made on Twitter as well. So here's the $64 million question. It's difficult enough, I think, these days to get somebody to entertain. Now, you've got a lovely way about you. I would imagine if anybody has got a chance, it would be you, of, gently coaxing somebody to listen to something they haven't heard before, about vaccines.
Oh, well, thank you, Richard.
No, you do. I mean that. So that's all true. You trying to get people to think about what Bill Gates has done, is doing, who he works for, who he represents, is hard enough without trying to get into people's minds the notion that these agendas are very long games, as you've just been alluding to there. They go back centuries, these families, these controlling families, these bloodlines, as David Icke would call them. It's all true. The truth is there, how the royal families of Europe and the financial powerhouses came together. And Dean Henderson, great work on this, and others.
Oh, yes.
Trying to get people to consider that, it's so difficult. It's just over the heads of so many. It's not because it's too intellectual for them. It's just horrifying for people, isn't it? It's like, I don't want to contemplate
that. It
is hard,
but think about, when you first came across this information, I guess you were shocked as well, right? I mean, I was pretty shocked.
Yeah.
This is the kind of information you have to read and reread and keep listening to and keep watching 100 videos on before you finally realize, oh my God, it's true.
It's real.
So, that's been sort of the way I've educated myself. myself on what's going on, etc. And just to make that one point about, I don't know if I made the point actually about the sovereignty, is that the theory is that it's because the powers that be understood that people would wake up eventually to this whole fraud, yeah. to the many frauds that have been perpetrated on us, and would wake up to an understanding of their own innate sovereignty, that this kind of regimen has been rolled out at this point in time, you know, with this COVID-19 and so forth, because they're trying to tamp us down before we break free. So this is another reason to really wake up and recognize that breaking free right now is super, super important. And, you know, I think appealing to people's innate power is one of the ways in which you can get them to listen and understand and, you know, do some research on their own, because most people actually do have a sense of their own power. They know who they are deep inside. People know who they are. Every one of your listeners knows who they are. A lot of people have just permitted themselves to become suppressed by, you know, the kind of lifestyle we've all been forced into, sort of this 9-to-5 job thinking and giving our power away to somebody external, whether it's an employer, a corporation, or a government, thinking that, you know, people outside know better than you and know more than you. Yeah. In actuality, everything is inside you. And this, by the way, goes back to the teachings of every ancient religion, which every religion says, you know everything in the world. You came into this world with great knowledge. You know, you have it inside of you. Well, deep down, because people, whatever age or stage of life they may be, everybody has lived enough to understand, you know, as an adult, I mean, you know, you've lived enough to understand a little bit of who you are, what you want in this world, what you think, and, you know, what you are drawn to. You know what you are drawn to. Nobody needs to tell you that. Nobody needs to tell you what you are drawn to, whether intellectually or emotionally. So to that extent, yes, you know who you are. So I think appealing to people's sense of, and that's a sense of power. If you know who you are, you know that you are a solid, perfect, extraordinary self. And you are in no way less or more than anybody else around you. So people in governments, people in organizations like the Bill Gates Foundation, who are trying to, you know, convince the rest of us that we need to listen to their idiotic ideas about wearing masks and taking tests and taking, you know, injections in order to get over something which is a flu virus, which we can perfectly well heal ourselves, you know, treat ourselves for. Those people need to be said no to. Those people need to understand that here we have a whole population of people who know themselves, who are equally powerful, who can stand up to them, you know. And maybe that's one of the ways in which you can sort of begin to ask people to do a little bit more research on all of these subjects. I personally think this issue of sovereignty is huge. There are, and I think you can sort of look at the, you know, the landscape of alt media currently, and you can tell with who's covering it and who's not covering it. You can kind of figure out, well, who's affiliated to what.
Yeah, I get you. I hear what you're saying. On that point, though, it won't always be the case that, you know, content creators are avoiding it because for nefarious reasons or for negative reasons. In many cases, they won't get into it because it's a bit of a slog, and it's difficult, I think. Like you said yourself, you need to dedicate hours to it. And if you've got a 60-minute live radio show or a 2-hour live radio show, it's difficult to get into it. Like, I've covered it in the past with a couple of different, with an English woman who's not been on for years, and most recently with Jordan. And I'm convinced you're right. It is huge. It is massive. Mm-hmm. But trying to get somebody to, you know, to contemplate it. But on that, you know, I think you make a good point
there. I'll tell you why it's important right now, Richie. Right now we're at the point where you have government saying, if you don't do as we say, then you can't have a life.
Yeah, it's never been more important.
You know, you can't go to the store, you can't get a job, you can't go to the pub, you can't, you know, go anywhere. So this is why it's deadly serious that we begin to look at, well, hello, can you really say that to me? Can you really stop me from having a life? That's the first question to ask, you know, and then start exploring from there as to what are my rights really in this world? And can I begin to create with other like-minded humans around me a world that actually permits me to have a life, to enjoy my God-given rights and privileges? Yeah. You know, I came into this life breathing. Can I continue to breathe? You know, so that's
can I ask you this, Ramona? Let me ask you this, because you invoked the name of the Almighty there. I'm not sure how I feel about a creator.
Okay.
How do you feel about it? And how does it, would that factor into your thinking? I mean, if indeed we were created in the image of a benevolent and loving entity or energy, where is it at a time like this when these things are happening to people? You know, we've talked about some ugly things tonight, but we've done so in a very positive way. You know, you exude lovely, positive energy. We talked about what happened to the farmers in India and what's still happening to farmers in India. I mean, how does a creator who might be watching what's happening here, how does that factor into everything that's going on? You know, and is that a barrier? Are there many people in the world today who are waiting for the intervention of the God they believe in? And is that in itself a barrier to progress? I don't know. It's a stupidly big, deep question to ask you, but I've asked you anyway. Yeah.
Those are big questions. You're right. But, you know, the question that you ask is, you know, where is God in all of this? I mean, I think the answer is, well, you know, God is here, whether you think of God as a he or a she or an entity, a source energy, you know, a consciousness, a creative consciousness that permeates the universe. I think that God energy is right here. It's in you and it's in me. It's in everybody who's listening. We are part of that God energy. You see, so on my thinking, I should say I was raised Christian. So, you know, I had a very traditional Christian upbringing, but I was always a rebel. So I took from Christianity what I wanted. Grew up in India, so I grew up with a healthy sense of other religions. And in time, over time as an adult, I've explored many other forms and ways of thinking. So I can call myself a little bit of a Gnostic Christian, a little bit of a Buddhist, a little bit of a Hindu yogi type, I suppose, because I read the words of the yogis, you know, the rishis and the mystics, some of them. So from all of this thinking, my thinking is of God as a kind of energy, you know, as a kind of consciousness that permeates the universe and is definitely reflected in us. I think, you know, we came from somewhere. We came from somewhere good, and we came from somewhere holy, and we came from somewhere very, very strong and positive. And honestly, life is positive, right? Every movement that we make is a positive act. Everything negative is sort of a backwards pull. So that's easy for me to see that distinction. So the very fact that we are alive, we're speaking, we have great energy flow here in this conversation. You know, all of these are wonderful, positive things to me. They suggest to me that we are expressing the God energy within us. And, you know, many people have said that this is literally a spiritual battle. It is a good versus evil battle. We've got all these people. I mean, think about it, Richie. I'm sure your many guests that you named just now, Jordan Maxwell, Dean Henderson, many others, have given you an awareness that, you know, these guys who over time have amassed quantities of wealth, who are now sitting at the top of that pyramid, all of these, you know, European bloodline families, the Rothschilds, you know, all of those people, they are actually, many of them, perhaps not all of them, engaged in this Luciferian enterprise of worshiping the devil and calling in demonic entities for power over the rest of us. Those are negative things. Those are very dark things, you know. They are the opposite of light and love and energy and positiveness. So I think good always wins. I mean, just the fact that we are alive right now, even though many of us are being targeted, many of us are being attacked by them, by the Luciferian lot, you know, suggests that we are suffering. Despite that suffering, we continue to live. We have a day. You know, according to the rishis, what they say is the very fact that the whole earth exists, that matter exists, the universe exists, that every day you wake up in the morning and the universe is still there around you, that is a sign that God is still there in the world. So, you know, I'm very positive. I'm very hopeful.
It's a beautiful thing you said there. And an old pal of mine used to say to me, these people who worship these Luciferian entities and the darkness, they can't and never have been able to create anything. All they've ever been able to do is to destroy. Whereas we, who don't go about in life hurting people or harming people or doing bad, we can create. And if we remember that, and this has stuck with me over the years, if we can hold on to that, that we have the power to create great things. And a great thing is even as small as doing something nice for somebody who lives in your neighbourhood. You know, creating that positive energy. And I really do believe that.
Yes, you know, yes, that is a wonderful reminder, Richie. The notion of creation, I mean, creation is a joy. And, you know, many of us take creation for granted. We are literally creating every single day, you know, whatever you're doing, whether you're with your family or you're just making dinner or breakfast for your family, those are acts of creation. Or you're working in the garden or you're writing or, you know, playing music or speaking or singing or whatever you're doing. All of these are sort of normal acts of creation that some people who understand that we are all creative beings take for granted. And, you know, some others think, oh, you know, creativity is for somebody else. That's not really true. Creativity is for everybody and we create naturally. But that's, you know, an interesting and important thing to remind ourselves, that we have that power to create always. And therefore, we can use that power to, you know, step beyond the norms and step beyond the strictures that are being imposed on us from the outside that are so negative, that are pushing down on us. We always have that spark and that fire burning inside us. We can push out of it and, you know, create a new space, a new world.
That's a beautiful place to leave it for today, right? Do me a favor, come back anytime you want, but don't leave it too long to come back on, because there are lots of things we could have gotten into today, but we didn't. I'd love to have you back on, Ramona.
Oh,
it's been a
wonderful
pleasure.
Thank you so much, Richie. That is such a nice invitation. I'd be happy to come back on anytime.
No,
thank
the honour would be ours.
And I'd love to have you on my show as well.
Well, I that'd be a problem because I couldn't do what you've just done, to be honest. All I could, I really couldn't.
Oh, I'm sure you
no,
can.
No, I couldn't. I'm not being modest. I'm telling the truth. Let me remind our listeners, many of the tweets tonight have come from people who have been listening to and reading Ramola in the past, which is lovely. Some of my listeners are new to Ramola's work. The website is everydayconcerned.net, youtube.com/RamolaDReports. With your permission, I'll grab anything that you do on Sovereignty on your own channel, with your permission. Obviously, I won't monetize it. And I will mirror it on my own YouTube channel. I'll put it on there. So it won't make too much of a difference maybe in terms of viewing numbers. But at least I'll put it on there. Because you're right, it is important. And you've sparked,
I'm delighted.
Yeah.
Richie, feel free. Take anything. I have a whole playlist called Free Yourself. And there's a whole bunch of interviews there. So feel free.
I will. I'll start uploading them onto my YouTube channel, which is not monetized anyway, so I won't be taking any. I won't be taking any money from you. I wouldn't do that in any case. But it's been.
I'm not monetized either. Don't worry.
No, nor will you be when you're talking about the subjects you talk about. It's been a tonic. You couldn't start a Monday off better than having somebody like you on. So Ramona, thanks so much, and I hope it'll be real soon when we get to hear from you again. Look after yourself, and again, thanks for giving us your time today. Lovely to have you on.
Thank you, Richie. And wonderful to be here. Thanks.
And bye for now. The amazing Ramola D live on Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. She's on YouTube. Excuse me, she's on Twitter. It's at ECC Every Day. That's at E for Echo, C for Charlie, C for Charlie, Every Day. It's all one word. At ECC Every Day. It is Ramola D Reports on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel. Very, very eloquent. Very thoughtful, and her presentations on YouTube, brilliantly put together and brilliantly researched. And when you've been doing the job as long as I have, you just love good content that's been very well researched and put together. I'll be back with you in about 60 seconds time.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyursky.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back to the program. It's exactly 14 and a half minutes to 7 o'clock. It's Monday's program, August 3rd. Yeah. That's the one. TH is Baldy. 3rd. The 33rd. 3rd. Yes, indeed. Loved having Romola D on the program. We'll be asking her back again real soon. And for more on sovereignty, do check out Romola D on YouTube, yes. But also check out my old pal Mark Windows, windowsontheworld.net, because Mark's done a lot on that as well. And Rog tells me that some of you have been asking on Facebook for me to get Jordan Maxwell back on. I was in touch with him a few weeks ago on Skype. We had a bit of a chat and we said we'd organise something. So I'll get back in touch with him and I'll organise it real soon. Yes. Now, my summer holiday is coming up. I think, well, I'm obviously with you this week and I'm with you all of next week. But I think then I'm taking a couple of weeks, I think, after that. I'll have to speak to her indoors for confirmation. But I'll keep you well posted on that. Anyway, okey dokey. Romola D reports at the YouTube channel. Hi to Bass Ninja. Hi to Mimi. Hi to Glass Onion. How you doing, Glass Onion? To Susan Smith. How you doing, Susan? And let me say again. I said it the other day and I said it the other day. 10 days or so ago, I put out an appeal for some help, something I don't do more than once or twice a year. I just don't do it. And I did, and you came through big style for the programme. So thank you to every one of you. Some people sent the programme £100. Some people sent the programme £50. Many people sent the programme £20. And we brought in about £2,000, which was hugely needed. Because when you're not mentioning it all the time, which I don't, and because things have been very difficult for people in, obviously, in recent months, obviously the support kind of waned a bit, the financial support. But when I put that appeal out, you came through loud and clear. Thank you. I mean it. And if you haven't heard from me, or if you don't hear from me, don't hold it against me. It's not because I'm not polite and that I won't send you an email. But if you want to hear from me, drop me an email through the website and I'll get back to you. Because I'd be glad to get back to you. Right. There was something I came across today, which is of interest. And I ran out of time in the monologue. But while we've got a few minutes, we'll give it just a quick mention. I was reading the Times this morning, as I do. And there was mention in the paper today of the Policy Exchange, which is a think tank, of course. A think tank. And they've published a report alleging that academics in UK universities who might hold conservative viewpoints, which is their absolute right, as is yours, to hold whatever bloody viewpoint you like. If you do hold conservative views, it's likely to be bad news for you if you're an academic in UK universities in the era of wokeness. Now, I've talked to the brilliant Stuart Wayton from Abertay University in Dundee. Stuart is a Geordie, of course. Sunderland, I think. And lovely man, must invite him back, very smart. And we've talked about this on the programme before. So, Talk Radio this morning had one of the authors of the study, Dr. Remy Adekoya. Now, Remy Adekoya is a black academic and he is of the left-wing persuasion. So it's to his credit that he is standing up for his colleagues whose opinions would be conservative in terms of their political opinions. So here he is talking to Talk Radio about the fact that right-wing academics are increasingly in danger of losing their jobs just because of their political opinions. Dr. Remy Adekoya speaking to Talk Radio earlier today.
Both sides, unfortunately, as you mentioned yourself, discriminate when it comes to hiring, publication and promotion. Unfortunately, since people with right-leaning views are in the minority, are a very small minority in academia, they tend to get disproportionately affected by this, okay? And so there is, we could talk about a structural discrimination if you are a right-leaning academic. So this sort of affects you more. And then we have that figure when 32% of those who identify as fairly right or right say they have hidden their views or neglected to mention their views for fear of what that might do to their career. And that is completely wrong, and I'm completely against that. Personally, I myself, I'm a left-leaning academic, but I think it's completely wrong that anybody around me should have to sort of worry about what they say. Any decent person, you know, we're talking about fairly right, you should have to worry about what they say.
Absolutely. But to take
both sides, unfortunately, as you mentioned yourself, discriminate when it comes to hiring, publication and promotion. Unfortunately, since...
Yeah, and then it cuts off anyway. So it's happening. The Telegraph newspaper specifically has covered this in great detail. There's been a bit of a cull on UK campuses, university and college campuses, of men and women who might be pro-Brexit, for example, who might have very strong opinions about gender and self-identification, for example. And you've had incidences where students have found tweets put out by professors or lecturers and have taken those tweets to the university management teams and said this person shouldn't be basically teaching or lecturing at university today because of these opinions. And in some cases, people have been warned. In others, people have lost their jobs. It's a free speech. Free speech is under threat everywhere you look. It doesn't matter where you look in society. Freedom of speech and freedom of expression is under threat, and it's going to be increasingly the case as we move closer and closer to the presentation of a vaccine for COVID. Because you had Tedros, the infamous Dr. Tedros from the World Health Organization today, speaking to the media saying that there are dozens of vaccines now nearing readiness, nearing the point at which they can be deployed and sent to doctors, surgeries all over the world. Dozens and dozens and dozens. You have news in this country on Sunday that a vaccine might be ready by the end of the year, initially to be given to so-called frontline workers, that nonsensical term frontline, given to people working in care, working in hospitals already. So as we get closer to that, you're going to see censorship on steroids. You're going to see people disappearing off of social media, disappearing off of Google, off of YouTube, all over the place. Particularly if they have a sizable following, you know, and viewing numbers on YouTube are no indication of the sort of following that people have, because a lot of people get they mess deliberately with their viewing numbers. I'm not saying this about me now, but I know they do it to other people. And people are doing far better than they might imagine they're doing. So as we get to the point where they're about ready to say, right, we've got it, it's safe, and everybody needs to take it, you'll start seeing people disappear all over the place. And that's the way it is. Thanks for your tweets today. Donkey Oti says, I'll be living in the hills before I get the vaccine. Living in the hills could be expensive, though, these days. Not sure about living in the hills. Hi to Lepa Dinis. Thanks for your kind words about Romola. Spiro Skouras is on YouTube. I don't need to tell you that. Subscribe to him if you get a chance. Hayden Hewitt has been tweeting today some very interesting things. Again, about identification. About not so much about mermaids, but about this hugely important issue of safe spaces for women, for real women. You can follow Hayden Hewitt on Twitter. It's at Hayden Hewitt. Check out triggerwarning.tv. These are people that I recommend you check out to get a different perspective on the big stories of the day. Thomas McFarlane. How you doing, Thomas? Thanks for having Romola on. A sincere, hardworking and impactful activist working in Truth Today, says Thomas. We enjoyed Romola. We'll certainly have her back again real soon. Hi to Patricia. Opulenza. Hi to Kimmy. Hi to the left hand of God, to Stuart there, and to everybody else who's tweeting this afternoon. Hi to Scottish John, who's in Austin in Texas. Hi to Boston. Put a tweet out today, and I think we'll end on this. And I meant it. You see, I don't understand what's going on. If you watched UK media today, the only truth you would have watched or heard, the only truth you would have been exposed to, is when they talked today about further job losses. DW Sports. I could go on, right? I could bring up bbc.co.uk news now if I wanted to, and I could read out any number of stories about job losses. What we are going to see in the coming weeks, months, and in the coming years is poverty, is joblessness, is misery on a scale that is beyond the imagination of most people. And that's going to have an impact on health, again, that people have never witnessed, that they have never experienced, that they couldn't even imagine the scope of. Massive. And I put out a tweet today. I didn't do it to get likes or for people to retweet it. I don't do that. I asked the question today, how can business owners in this country sit by twiddling their thumbs while their businesses go down the toilet because of decisions made by a tyrannical jumped up little puppet? Of course, who didn't make the decisions. Acting on instructions given to him by persons unknown. Some of them are known. How can you sit there and do nothing while your livelihood goes down the toilet and the livelihoods of your employees? Everything you ever worked for, gone in the blink of an eye. How could you not have the courage to tell them where to go and to open your business? And I know some people are doing it, but not enough are doing it. Disobey. No, we won't put barriers in and plastic shields. No, we won't insist that when people enter our place of work that they wear masks and that they keep 2 meters away. No, we won't. We will open our businesses again and we will trade. Where are the chambers of commerce? Where are the business associations? While this fucking avalanche of misery is coming down. You can see it now at the top of the mountain. So why don't you stand up to it? Why don't you take heed of people like Simon Dolan and say enough is enough now? We won't be complicit in our own destruction. The ruining of our businesses and our lives. I don't understand it. Why they don't stand up to it? How have people become so meek? You know? It vexes me. Open up. You might say, oh, you've got a big mouth. Listen, you've known me long enough. If I was running a business, be it a bar, be it a coffee shop, there's no fucking way that I would obey. They'd have to drag me out of there kicking and screaming. I would not comply with my own downfall. Where are the businesses? I say to people who have a business, have some courage. You know, speak to the fellow business owners on your high streets and say no. Stand up to it. That would be my advice. Ignore them and carry on the way you used to carry on. I'm leaving you with the Doobie Brothers today. Massive thanks to Romola D for her time today and for sharing her work and her research with us. Really glad to have her on the programme. Romola D reports at the YouTube channel, going out with the Doobies, closing out today's programme. Look after yourselves and one another. Enjoy Monday evening, and we'll talk again tomorrow at 5 p.m. Bye.